This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
All right, here we are back at you once again, bringing you all the latest and greatest happenings in the world of hard rock and heavy metal music. The good, the bad, the stupid, the ugly, and maybe even the sad. Yeah, it might make you sad a little bit today, but we're going to cover it all right here as Decibel Geek presents GeekWire. My name is Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my awesome friend, a man with his finger on the pulse of what's happening in the world around us. That man is Chris Sinzak. My brother, are you bringing the news?
I'm just really just a man with a blabbermouth bookmark. So, yeah, I'll do the best I can.
I give them some credit, I guess. They did cover us on the Ace Frehley thing for once.
I know. We'll see you in 10 years, Blabbermouth.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your ongoing contributions to Decibel Geek.
I'm going to start off on a sad note because this broke since we did a GeekWire last. Firehouse singer CJ Snare has died at the age of 64 from apparently colon cancer.
Wow.
I knew that he had had some health problems, but I don't think he had publicly disclosed that it was cancer. So, because I follow him on Facebook, I know he had had a surgery weeks ago, maybe months ago. And I remember that the band had to have a fill-in singer while he recovered. But all I ever knew was he had stomach problems. I had no idea that he had cancer and that it was this far along. It's a really, really sad story.
Yeah, I didn't know about none of that stuff. You know, all of a sudden one day, the news is there. You know, CJ Snare from Firehouse is dead. And I was like, I didn't even know there was anything wrong with him. I was like, you're so young. What was it, a car accident or something like that? And I guess right now is when I found out what the deal was. That sucks.
Yeah, I guess he'd been fighting it for a while. His girlfriend or wife, Catherine, had posted about it. And just, I guess in 2020, it was when he got diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer.
Damn.
They went for a second opinion, had a life-saving operation at the time that gave him another 4 years. So, you know, glad he lived as long as he did. But it's a damn shame to leave the world at 64 and Perry, who, you know, we had on the show years ago, but obviously was the original bass player for Firehouse. And he posted a cool old pic from the mid-80s of them performing together in the band Max Warrior, which was the band before Firehouse. And that guy had a lot of people that loved him because everyone just sort of came out of the woodwork with tributes. So because you don't really hear much about Firehouse, but I'll have to admit, of all the people I've heard about in the industry, I don't think I've ever heard a bad thing about the guy. He's one of the kind of an Eric Carr nice guy type person.
Yeah, and I think Firehouse is one of those bands that really, I don't know, sometimes they don't get a lot of love and respect. And I get it, you know, because at that time, rock music was changing. And, you know, you're going from the L.A. Sunset Strip metal, hard rock, into grunge, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, that type of stuff. But Firehouse was like the last band standing, almost.
Yeah, they were the ones that were closing the door behind them on the end of the... I shudder to call them glam metal. I mean, they weren't really glammy, but it was that era. And like, I remember Perry telling us that, you know, they had like a top 20 hit on the Billboard charts in 95.
Right.
And
yeah,
that was the last of that era. And then, you know, a lot of people have kind of seized on the weird coincidence that April 5th was the death date for Kurt Cobain, Layne Staley, and CJ Snare. And all three were nominated for, I think it was a 1992 American Music Award. And as if you listen to our show, you know, Firehouse beat those two bands.
Yeah.
And subsequently, Perry got roughed up in the bathroom by some members of Alice in Chains.
That's a wild story, man. That's one I still can never wrap my mind around, how Blabbermouth never grabbed a hold of that one.
I don't know. But the April 5th thing is correctly pointed out by Baco. I saw him correct a couple people. Lane Staley, it's a best guess because he was alone in an apartment for a couple of weeks when he was found. So it's,
right.
They think that he died around April 5th, but it's not for sure. But it is a weird coincidence.
Yeah, we just talked about that on the last Geek Wire when we did the Rockstar Death Days. Kurt Cobain, Lane Staley,
right,
and now CJ Snare. That's one thing I hate about doing the Geek Wire is when I have to add people to the Rockstar Death Days list. That's one thing I never like to do, but unfortunately, CJ Snare has now found himself a forever home in the Rockstar Death Days.
Well, and I guess that Firehouse had a show on the books with the fill-in singer here in Tennessee, like Eastern Tennessee, like last weekend, and they basically made it into kind of a memorial show for CJ. Apparently they got through it okay, but God, that's got to be difficult just days after the guy dies and have to go through with that. But, you know, just, you know, best wishes to that camp. And, yeah, we're not getting any younger, are we?
No. And Firehouse, you know what? Love them or maybe don't love them. You got to give it to them. They're still out there. They're still going. And they were a huge band in a time where they should have not been huge at all.
Yeah. No, I still listen to those first two records. I like them a lot.
I actually like some of their later stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah, Category 5, I think, was one.
Yeah,
that was
a good one. Yeah, that's actually my favorite record by them.
That one's kind of their Motley 94 record.
Totally, yep.
Yeah, people bring that one up a lot. Well, a few people bring that one. Right. Yeah, I get that a lot.
Oh, is that a reference to me being the champion of March Madness?
That was great all the way around. And just, I've had uncomfortable visions of Mitch Malloy in my head ever since, which I should be upset about that. But amazing episode either way. We're useless. We live to be 100. We're genius.
We know our days are numbered.
Some Motley Crue news. This is more of a case study in how annoying people or dumb people really are. Nikki Sixx says Motley Crue's new music has been described as a, quote, powerful cross between country and hip-hop.
The fuck?
When he was asked on Twitter about this, or X, or whatever the fuck you want to call it. Crue coming up right around the corner. People who have heard it say it's a powerful cross between country and hip-hop. Now, anyone with a rational thinking brain would know that he's being sarcastic. But you would not believe how many people are like, oh my God, what are Motley Crue doing?
Well,
they're going to do a country and hip-hop song? Get the fuck out of here.
Well, when you read it as a headline, you know, and you don't hear his voice being funny, and this is Nikki Sixx we're talking about, so you never want to put shit like that off the table.
Well, he has tried to jump at trends. I'll give him that.
My God. When is this supposed to be coming out?
I don't know. John 5 said they recorded several songs, and then he can't wait for people to hear them, but he has no idea when they're coming out.
Yeah, because they've been talking about this new Motley Crue album for a long time now, and the one thing I don't ever hear is the release date.
I think it's just a handful of songs. It's not a record. And I think the plan is to release singles, but they won't even say when the single's coming out. So who knows? But I just, like, people are so fucking stupid. They call her Miss Divine.
Before we started recording today, Chris and I did a whole big old session for Chris and Aaron and even a brand new Torpedo Dudes. If you're a member of the Decibel Geek VIPs on Patreon, then you'll be getting that real soon. And I wonder, kind of like we were talking about Kiss, how when they came out with Monster, that they really didn't play none of that stuff on the tour, which happened to be with Motley Crue at the time. You think Motley Crue is going to be playing any of this stuff when they go out on tour? New stuff?
At least one song, because they want to try to continually justify why Mick isn't there and John is.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
It's the Tommy Thayer, Eric Singer thing. The only reason Modern Day Delilah, and especially the only reason Say Yeah has stuck in the set list for how many years, is to try to justify the current lineup.
Well, shit, if you want to justify him, then let Tommy Thayer bust out some lightning strikes or something.
I wish. Honestly, Tommy's two songs on those two records are some of the better material.
On those albums, yeah. That's weird, but it's true.
And I think the one Eric sings, even though Paul wrote it, was All for the Love of Rock and Roll. That's a great song.
Awesome, yeah. That's probably my favorite song on there.
That sounds like 70s Kiss to me.
Man, I hope Eric Singer busts out some ESP and even Tommy Thayer. You know, if Tommy Thayer comes out with a new solo album, I'd be excited to hear it. I know that sounds crazy, but it's true.
I saw that he's doing like a guest guitar part on a band called The Wild Things' new album, but they're a little more poppy.
Yeah, should be interesting. Those guys got to cash in on their Kiss legacies, though, right?
There's always conventions, you know. I heard that Keith LaRue's looking to do the Indianapolis convention again now that he's not having to work with Kiss. So I wouldn't be shocked if he puts together something really cool that gets it. He might even get Gene and Paul. He's gotten each of them separately, but now that they're retired, I wouldn't be shocked to see a convention with Gene, Paul, Eric, and Tommy, at least, showing up as guests.
Don't threaten me with a good time in Indianapolis. All I need is an excuse to go. I love that city.
Yeah, we had a good time last year.
Yeah.
Next story, Rudolf Schenker explains why the Scorpions decided against retiring after 2010's Farewell Tour.
Well, wasn't it every time they went to the grocery store or every time they went to the car wash, people were coming up to him going, no, don't retire. We want the Scorpions back. I thought that's what it was.
This sounds crazier than that.
Oh, really?
I read this. This headline normally would not grab my attention, but honestly, guys, it's a really weak week for rock news. So I had to really pull what I could. But then I read the quote, and I'm like, oh, this is gold. So he did an interview with Eddie Trunk, and Eddie brought it up. You know, like, you guys retired in 2010, and now you're back, and, you know, can you explain that? And he says, you have to think about that what we didn't know when we made the farewell tour almost 15 years ago, it was exactly the time when WhatsApp came up, when all this new technology on the internet came, that people watching the Scorpions on WhatsApp and seeing young kids between 16 and 24 or whatever, they were finding out about the Scorpions. So, and what was happening on the final tour, on that tour, kids were in front of the stage. We said, what's happening here? The older fans were up in the balcony or whatever. And we said, hey, it's a complete new feeling on stage. I'm calling bullshit on this.
WhatsApp? Is he talking about, does he mean YouTube?
No, it's a social media app.
Okay, all right.
It's kind of, although WhatsApp is usually used to like do cash transactions and shit. I think he's trying to mean TikTok or something. Maybe. But I'm sorry. My kids were in high school around the time that this was happening. I don't remember any of my kids or their friends coming around going, ooh, rock you like a hurricane. No.
Have you heard this new song? It's this band called the Scorpions. I just discovered them on WhatsApp.
Yeah, I mean, how insane does that sound?
I don't know. I'm up in the balcony. What do I know?
Yeah, exactly. I used to think Michael Schenker was the crazy Schenker brother. Yeah. Now I'm starting to reevaluate that.
Well, that's wild, man. So I was on the Venmo the other day, and I heard this song. It was great.
I was checking out at PayPal, and all of a sudden I heard this new Tuck Smith song, and it was amazing.
Yeah, that's wild, man. Yeah. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Yeah,
Rudolph's just as crazy as his brother.
But, you know, the cool thing about it is they ended up coming out with that other album after that, which was really good. And I don't fault the Scorpions for coming back.
I don't mind, but just be honest and just say it was a big payday. That's why we came back.
Yeah, there was still money on the table, you know. And,
sure.
And we still had songs, you know, that we could write and record, you know. And so, I mean, that album was damn good.
This is, I didn't even have this on the list, but I'll delve into it real quick. Dee Snider, of course, Dee does interviews every week, no matter what's going on. So he did an interview, and he mentioned that Twisted Sister is getting so many offers that are at such a high amount of money, it's getting very hard to turn them down in their retirement.
Yeah.
And normally I'd be like, oh, he's just hyping things, but
I don't think so.
That might be the truth. And like, this is what should scare people, because it's, you know, we do our best to promote the future of rock and roll and bands that can still hack it on stage and bands you should be supporting. But from a promoter standpoint, they want the old favorites.
Right.
So I don't doubt that even a band, even Kiss, I guarantee you, Kiss, at least weekly, is probably still getting big dollar offers to do shows because of music not selling anymore. So it's kind of like, there are bands out there that are big. I get it. But as far as the classic rock, hard rock vein, it's getting fewer and far between as far as the ones that will sell a lot of tickets to a big arena.
Right. And we talk about it all the time. Every time we do a Fresh Blood episode, it's like, here are some bands that are worthy of being lifted up. Yeah. Because once the legends are gone, what are we going to do? And that's what's happening now. You know, instead of these promoters going, hey, here's this up-and-coming rock band that's got some real momentum behind them, I'm going to put them in my venue, they're going, those guys aren't going to sell enough tickets because people aren't checking out new music, but everybody knows who a band like Twisted Sister is. That's who I want in my club. That's who I want in my arena. And that's a band that'll move some tickets.
Yeah, it's all based on nostalgia. And in fairness, you know, we made fun of Papa Roach for talking about how they're getting into their Metallica phase or whatever the fuck the singer said. But it's kind of true because like Blink-182 just made a fortune off their recent tour. And it's not really our music, but for the generation right behind us, that's totally their music. And Green Day still plays big places. So it's just shifted into the 90s artists. But at the same time, there's still nothing brand new that's blowing things up, which is really disappointing and kind of scary.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks. We got to do it. We got to figure out a way, you know, because if you think about it, you know, we talked about it last week, Juan Crucier doing the other voice of Rat. All right. So you take that as a guy who owns a club and say a really good let's say Dawn of the Rising, a really good up and coming band. And you're the promoter of this club and you've got a night open and you want to sell as many tickets as possible. I hate to say it, but you'd go with Juan Crucier.
It's a known quantity. And it's also laziness. Laziness on society's part in general.
Right.
And it's filtered into Hollywood too. I mean, do you need another Spider-Man movie?
Right, yeah. Nobody comes up with really cool new movies anymore. Everything's gotta be Beetlejuice 2 or you know, this part 5 or this part 7. You know, it's never something new. That's really cool. No. It's always trying to revamp something from the past. So you take Dawn of the Rising and say, this would be an amazing fucking show, and people are going to be blown away by how good this band is, but in the society that we live in, are people going to come out to be turned on to a new band? No, let's get the bass player from Rat to sing Rat songs. People will come out for that.
Yeah, things are too convenient now, but at the same time, maybe we're just waiting around for a resurgence, but it's also we're getting older, so of course what we love is going to get less popular. So maybe rock and roll needs to go back underground. I don't know. It's never going to die. There's always clubs and theaters, but
well, we've been underground for a while now.
Yeah, I know. It's been underground for a while, but I don't know. We're here to fly the flag either way, but yeah, man, it's like even bands that are pretty much broken, but they have that name recognition. The promoters want that name because it's easier.
We'll pull you out of retirement. We'll offer you enough money to come play the show. And that's how bands like the Scorpions will come back. You know, they probably wanted to retire. They probably wanted to enjoy all the years of hard work and all the album sales and all the money they made. They probably actually really wanted to retire and enjoy the rest of their lives. But then when people come a knocking and showing those green dollar bills, man, you go, well, shit, you know, there's still money on the table. There's still people that want to see us. Let's go back out and do it again. And you can't fault them for doing it. But what sucks is that on a whole, and I know it doesn't apply to the people that listen to this show, but the people that listen to this show can look at the world around them and see people. And it's always kind of been this way. People that don't appreciate good music. People that just want to go to what they know. I remember asking a guy, well, what do you like? And he told me, whatever's popular. And that blew my mind. You're like, how can you say that? How can you not have an opinion about music to say, I like whatever's popular? That was like one of the craziest things anybody ever told me. It blew me away. And I couldn't understand it.
Well, honestly, I've learned that not everyone's wired the way we are. And my wife is a prime example. I try so hard to get my wife into this type of music. And like, there's times where she'll hear a song. She's like, oh, that's pretty good. You know, she's not opposed to this style. And she's not really a fan of any style. And she's just like, if I hear a song that I like, it's good. I'll hum along or I'll sing if I know it. She's like, but that's really where it ends for me. She's like, I'm not reading liner notes. I don't care who produced it. I don't, if I hear a song I like, I don't feel compelled to go buy their catalog.
Yeah. She's not waiting for the new album from any band in particular to come out?
No. The only thing that comes close is Pearl Jam. She kind of likes Pearl Jam, but that's about it. And she owns maybe two records of theirs. But yeah, to her, music is just an add-on for life. Much like I'll watch the occasional reality TV show, but doesn't mean I'm obsessed with them and know who, you know, who produces it or whatever. It's just different interests. But, you know, the majority of people are casual music listeners, sadly.
And then it goes to movies and everything else. You know, like you say that, I don't know the names of actors a lot of times.
Right.
But I can sure tell you all four members of Motley Crue. Yeah. Today, in the originals, in the middle in 94, I can tell you everybody that was in that band. But I don't know shit about who was whatever in a movie. So, I mean, I don't know. It's weird, but we're special.
Well, we get tunnel vision as rock nerds. So it's like there's times where it's like we think this is pressing stuff. But the big bad world out there doesn't so much, which is that's like normally it doesn't matter. But when it comes to the future of a genre, it does worry you.
Yeah. You know. Little bit. Definitely does.
Speaking of worrisome things, Sebastian Bach. I just love the headline of this. My wife calls me man-child. And my response is, so does the rest of the world.
Everybody. Everybody.
But no, his new album is going to be called Child Within the Man. And it's actually kind of a cool story. The painting from his father that he's using for the cover, which his father did the artwork for Slave to the Grind and I believe Subhuman Race. His father was an artist.
And Sebastian Bach's solo album, Angel Down. He did it for
And
that
Angel
too.
Down, that's yep. right. His father was a very talented artist, so that's kind of cool. And I've loved everything I've heard off the record so far, so I think it's going to be cool. But, you know, any chance to poke fun at Sebastian being childish, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, at least he's manning up to it. You know, says, hey, even my wife calls me a man-child. I don't really give a shit what the rest of the world says about me.
Oh, he's childing up to it.
Oh, yeah. Impressive.
Yeah.
Back in the night, wolves are up back. Forget to silence, into a curse of light. Lies are forever left, stealing from God. One leg's in me.
This was just a cool little story I saw. Bruce Dickinson did a show at the Whiskey a Go-Go in L.A., I think a couple of shows, actually. And on the first day of ticket sales, he surprised fans by showing up as the ticket seller in the booth out front.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
That is super cool. Because that's your most hardcore fans, man. They're showing up at the ticket box office to buy the tickets. You know them are your most hardcore fans.
Either that or Bruce is just incredibly cheap. And he's like, I'm not paying somebody to sell these tickets. I'm going to do it myself.
How much you paying that guy? No, no, yeah. No. I'll do it. I'll handle it.
I'll save $50. I got nothing else to do.
Man, can you imagine how blown away those people were when they got there to buy their tickets and it's him?
No, that had to have been like a dream come true for those people. That's one of the cooler publicity things I've seen done because it obviously draws more attention to his shows. But have you listened to the new record that he put out?
I've heard some of the songs, but I haven't heard the whole thing. What I've heard, I liked.
Yeah, it's really solid. I like it better than the Senjutsu album that Maiden put out. I think I would have much rather had this album.
Yeah, man, that album just really hasn't stuck with me. Like, at the time, I know that made my top 10. It wasn't right at the top at the end of that year, but it was on the list. But honestly, I haven't pulled that one out and listened to it in a while.
What, Senjutsu?
Yeah.
Hated it from the start. I haven't liked the last two or three albums of their, other than a couple of songs, but... And with the Bruce album, it, he got Roy Z to produce it, and Roy Z does a great job at making the guitar sound really big.
Yeah.
And I'm a guitar player, so of course I'm going to prefer that, because that's one of my big knocks on Maiden is you can tell Steve Harris runs the band, because Steve Harris is louder than everything else on all their albums. And I've never liked that part of them.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I get you're a good bass player, but like, we don't need to hear you twice as loud as the guitars.
Right, because the guitar players are awesome too. And really,
yeah,
you know, that's it. It should be even.
That's what I think. I mean, it should be for the good of the song.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But no, Mandrake Project is good. Listen to it. But that's a cool move on Bruce's part.
Super cool. I can only imagine. What it was like for those fans, you know. And like you say, if you're showing up at the box office to buy them tickets, and you're not just getting them on your phone, that's some real deal old school fans right there. So what a thrill for them, man. I love it.
Faithless, he denied the truth that he had come to steal, to kneel before the poet, not the altar or the priest. He's washed himself in misery before he came to pray. He'd hoped in his false penitence some sympathy he'd sway.
So you want to do the Camaro segment?
Yeah, before I do Camaro segment, which I got all the Rockstar Death Days and the new albums coming out and some album anniversaries we want to remember, I just want to tell a quick story, because anybody that listens to this show knows that rock and roll music affects us in a way that maybe don't necessarily affect the rest of the world, and we talk about that a little bit. And what's important to remember is that we're special. You know, they call it average for a reason, because there's above average and there's below average. We are the above. And rock and roll affects us in special ways. And I want to tell a quick story, because I got a huge surprise from my brother this week. So back in 1998, I was working at Pure Rock Z104, and the sales lady had a pair of tickets for a show that night, and it was the Violent Femmes. And Violent Femmes aren't necessarily a band we talk about a lot here, because they're considered like folk punk. But they're also, outside of Stevie Rochelle, Wisconsin's biggest rock band. It's true. You know, we're not Minnesota. We ain't got a million of them. But we've got the Violent Femmes. And so I went to my dad and I said, "Hey, Dad, you want to go to the show tonight?" And it was like a Tuesday night. And he's like, "No." And I was like, "Come on, I got two free tickets to the Violent Femmes." And he's like, "The what?" And I was like, "Trust me, we'll have a good time." And I talked my dad into going. And we went, we had a really good time. And my brother had found, and everybody that knows, my dad passed away not too long ago, that my dad had actually saved his ticket stub from that concert and wrote on the back, "Aaron took me," and that he had a good time. And man... that meant so much to me. And the fact that rock and roll music and music in general touches us all in such a special way and creates such great memories, that it's kind of how, why we do this, you know? It's because it means something more to us. And I want to thank everybody that tunes into this show every single week for it, because you are just like we are, and we love and appreciate you very much.
Let me just say that, I saw that post. That was an awesome story, and that's so cool that he kept the ticket.
It's so cool, man. It's so cool. I couldn't even believe it. I hadn't thought about that in a minute, you know, with everything going on, and then, you know, thinking about the good times with my dad. And I did think about that night after everything happened, and I wish I'd have talked to him about it before he passed. But, man, we had such a good time that night. And my dad was just like, holy shit, look at that xylophone player. And that guy's going nuts on the xylophone. And that's probably the only time you're ever going to hear that instrument mentioned on this show.
Yeah, I can't think of a xylophone specific.
The Violent Femmes, they like the Eddie Van Halen xylophone. You know, it was insane. And yeah, it was a great memory. And it's rock, you know, it's the music that I used to sit and listen to my dad's records when I was a little bitty kid, and getting to take him to a concert, and the fact that he saved the ticket, it's fucking awesome, man. I love it.
Dahmer's dead, Dahmer's dead, a broomstick bash him upside his head. Dahmer's dead, Dahmer's dead, a broomstick bash him upside his head. Upside his head, upside his head, a bloody broomstick, Dahmer's dead. Am I supposed to feel outraged? Am I supposed to feel sorrow? Jeffrey Dahmer has no bright tomorrow.
Dahmer's dead, Dahmer's dead,
a broomstick bash him upside his head. Dahmer's dead, Dahmer's dead, dead, bloody broomstick, Dahmer's dead. Long live the broomstick upside his head. Long live the broomstick, Dahmer's dead.
So, we're awesome together, all of us, everybody listening to this. Let's do the Camaro segment. I got some album anniversaries right around the time you're listening to this. If you're listening to it as it's coming out brand new, here's some albums we want to remember. 15-year anniversary back in 2009, not just for the first album, but for the band, really. It's the 15-year anniversary of Hailstorm.
Right on.
20-year anniversary back in 2004. Drowning Pool came out with the album Desensitized. It was the first album they came out with after Dave Williams had passed away, their lead singer. It's pretty tough for a band to carry on after their lead singer dies. Drowning Pool, over the years, ended up having a couple of different lead singers, but this was their first shot at it after their dude passed away. 20-year anniversary on that. This one, too. Oh, I love this one. Hangover Music Volume 6. What happened to the other volumes? I have no idea. But it's a new album from Black Label Society in 2004. I'm always down with that. 20-year anniversary. And this one, Anthrax, Music of Mass Destruction. I know you love that one, right?
Music of Mass Destruction. What year was this?
2004.
But that wasn't an original album, was it?
Google it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, because it sounds familiar, but I don't think I ever, I don't know that, I think that's like a live or a compilation.
Oh, maybe it's a live album or something. I don't know.
It's a live album.
Okay, I just kind of whipped this together. See, you know what? You listen to podcasts like Joe Rogan, and he's got that dude, Jamie, right? And every time he's got something in question, he'd be like, Jamie, look that up. We need a Jamie just to sit back quietly and correct us when we fuck up. So when we say, yeah, Billy Morrison, yeah, that dude, he's got that new song with Ozzy. And, you know, he was in Warrant and he was in Tough. No, that's Billy Morris, not Billy Morrison. Two totally, completely different people. I have no idea, but I just spouted out anyway. That's where we needed Jamie to go, actually, those are two different people, Camaro. Well, you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I dropped the ball, too, because it got past me, and I edited the episode, yeah. So I didn't even notice until after the fact either. I was like, oh, yeah, it's the same guy, right?
Wrong.
Yeah, wrong, completely wrong on both our parts. But no, Music of Mass Destruction, I remember it now. It came out 2003, but I was just starting my family then, so I never even picked this one up, so I have no idea if it's good or not.
I don't know either.
Alive 2 came out a year later, and that's a good one.
Alive 2?
Yeah, they had a live album called Alive 2. It's them playing at a show in Chicago. That one I actually own.
Okay, I don't know nothing about that one.
That one's good.
Is that the one where it's got like the Rock and Roll Overlooking cover on it?
Mm-mm, no. No, you're thinking of something else.
Okay, I don't know. Whew, it's been a long week. I can't even believe we're here doing this.
Alive 2 for them wasn't a rock and roll. I know what you're talking about, though, but they used that for something else.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, at any rate, let's jump back to 1999, a 25-year anniversary for Alice Cooper and his album, The Life and Crimes of Alice Cooper.
And that was a box set, I believe.
Fucking this all up. All right.
Yeah, because I own that one. It's okay. A long box. It's got a lot of cool rare stuff on it.
Yeah, though. Nice. All right. Yeah. So then let's go back to 1989, the year we all got our heads blown off because it was the year of being headless. I'm talking about Black Sabbath, Headless Cross, and Wasp.
Headless Children.
Both came out about the same time, 35 years ago, both celebrating an anniversary.
The headless year.
Coincidence? I don't know.
And Vito Bratta was around at that time, and he played a headless guitar. So did Eddie Van Halen. Wow. And Paul Stanley.
It's all coming together now. Let's all put on our body glove G-strings and have a good time.
It was the year of Ichabod Crane.
Ichabod Crane? Oh, the headless horseman. Okay, I got you. All right.
I can get high-minded on Decibel Geek.
I've needed a couple of beers after the day I've had, so let's keep it going. 35 years ago, also for this band, X Japan, with their album Blue Blood. It's a damn good one. If you don't know about Visual K, Japanese hard rock music, that's a really good place to start. The album Blue Blood by X Japan. It's killer. Also around the same time, 35 years ago, the debut album from Blue Murder. That's a classic. Yeah, total classic, man. Love that album. And also Tom Petty, Full Moon Fever. No Heartbreakers, just Tom Petty.
Yeah, and if you've ever seen the Running Down a Dream documentary about the whole Tom Petty story, there's a good chapter in there about the drama behind that decision.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yep.
All right, so then let's jump back 40 years to 1984. Only got one. Roger Waters, The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking. You know that album?
No, I've never heard that one.
It's not bad. There's some actually pretty cool stuff on there that's pretty Pink Floyd sounding. I don't hate it, but it's not like a perfect album or nothing. 45 years ago, takes us back to 1979, the debut album from New England.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. We did On Assignment on that, didn't we?
Yeah. Don't Ever Want to Lose Ya.
That's right. Yeah. Pretty good album, man. I'm glad we did that episode because I knew New England because they had the Casablanca connection.
Yeah,
to Kiss.
Paul Stanley produced the record.
That's right.
They opened for Kiss on the Dynasty Tour.
That's right. Yeah, they should have been huge, but they weren't. Still a pretty damn good album. I recommend that one.
Pretty solid pop rock for that era.
Yeah. And then also 45 years ago, Blackfoot Strikes, which that's kind of the quintessential Blackfoot album, I think, even though they got 100 of them.
Yeah, but you cannot go into a record store pretty much anywhere in the Southeast without finding a copy of that album.
You know, that's totally true. That's totally true.
In dollar bins everywhere.
I've got Blackfoot on my CD hunt list, and, you know, that's the first one you find when you go, oh, you know what, I want to check out more Blackfoot. That's the one. It's got the Black Cobra on the cover of it.
Yep.
And then, like, every time I go to look, because they got so many albums, and you don't never see the other ones. It's very rare, but they've always got that one. It's true. All right, so then let's jump back 50 years to 1974. We've got an album from Robin Trower, Bridge of Sighs. you know, blues rock guitar player. I think that's the one that's got Day of the Eagle on it, which is just a kick-ass rock song. Instrumental, but man, it freaking rules. Go ahead, look that one up when you're done listening to this. Also, 50 years ago, 1974, we get Sweet Fanny Adams, the Sweet F.A., from the band Sweet.
That's a great album.
That's a pretty damn good one, too. And then Nazareth came out with Rampart, which is a good album. Funkadelic was back with Standing on the Verge of Getting It On. Always love Funkadelic album title names. So cool. And then Elf, you know, the first band with Ronnie James Dio, 50-year anniversary for Carolina County Ball.
I love that one.
It is pretty cool, man. For years, I never listened to Elf. I didn't know nothing about them. And then I was like, I gotta find this stuff. I got to know what Dio was doing before Dio, before Sabbath and all that. It's not Sabbath, and it's definitely not the kind of stuff he would do later on with Dio. It's more, I don't want to say light rock, but there is elements of that in there.
Yeah.
It's not heavy like Sabbath. It's not heavy like Dio, but it's still really damn good.
I almost heard like a Southern rock type vibe to their stuff.
That's kind of what I was going to say, but he's a upstate kind of guy.
Yeah, but they had that, it's just 70s album rock is type sound. They were good, but obviously he had greater things to go on to.
Yeah, definitely did. And then 55 years ago, way back in 1969, the debut album from Johnny Winter, talking about blues rockers. Man, you can't top that guy. Albino and everything. If that ain't metal, I don't know what is. Johnny Winter. And then finally, Savoy Brown. You know anything about Savoy Brown? You ever listen to them?
I listened to them a couple times. The big thing everyone knows is that Kiss opened for them for like a year. Yeah. Or on and off for a year when before Alive. But no, they were okay. Just 70s rock music, kind of on the same level as Elf. You know, good, but we're not going to break out.
Yeah, see, and I never knew nothing about Savoy Brown. But then I found an album one time. It was a CD, and the cover, the album's called Inside Looking Out. And it's got like this skull on the cover, and it's like getting overgrown by vegetation. And there's this little dude, and he's looking into the eye of this big giant skull. And I was like, that is so metal looking. This album has to be good. You know, just based on the cover, and the price was right. And I said, I got to try it. This album cover is so cool looking. And I got it back, and you know what? Yeah, it's 70s rock, but man, there's some cool, cool stuff on there, man. I actually became a fan of Savoy Brown. Just going, this album cover looks so metal. This has got to be great.
Yeah.
But the band wasn't metal, but they're a good blues kind of rock band.
I just because of the Kiss connections, I've gotten into several of those 70s bands that were either headliners over Kiss or became openers before Kiss, like Uriah Heep from the 70s or Savoy Brown or Manfred Mann's Earth Band, or there was JoJo Gunn. You know, I've just gone on and looked these bands up just to hear what they sounded like. And some of them, it made sense. Other ones, it's like, why were they on the same bill? Like Billy Preston.
Yeah. But,
which, no disrespect to Billy Preston, like some of his stuff, but it's, you wouldn't think of him and Kiss together.
No, what his fans must have thought.
They're probably pretty freaked out.
I bet. Talking about way back then, I bet you they were. So those are your album anniversaries for this time around. You want to bust out that Black Label Society Hangover Music. Of course, both the Headless albums, The Headless Cross, The Headless Children, Black Sabbath, Wasp, both great albums. I think those are probably the best ones on the list this time around, I think. The Hailstorm debut is damn good.
That's a good one, too. And Headless Cross, you know, that reminds me of the, you know, the Sabbath's putting out a Tony Martin era box set, and I'm excited to get that.
Yeah, you think that's going to have some unreleased stuff on it?
I think it does, and it's also the big thing everyone wants is the remix of Forbidden is going to be on there.
Okay, all right. I'd be down
it's
for
called
that.
Like Anno Mundi or something like that is the name of the set.
That's a weird album.
Yeah.
But it'd be cool to check it out. There's stuff on there that is cool.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting curiosity to check. I'm just glad Tony Iommi is willing to delve into that part of his career because it's very overlooked.
Yeah, anything that they do, I'd be interested in seeing and hearing because I love me some Sabbath, all eras.
Well, except for Graham or the Ian Gillan.
I even like that.
Must be nice.
It's all right, I guess.
Maybe if I do as much cocaine as they did when they made it, maybe it would sound better. I don't know.
And you'd say, this is the greatest album I ever heard, and then you'd fall over dead.
Yeah, I'd have a heart attack.
All right, so let's do some rock star death days. This is probably my favorite GeekWire of the entire year.
Yeah?
There's three of them.
Oh, good.
I love that. It's sad. I kind of sometimes don't want to do this segment because it makes me sad. But then I remember what we're doing here is important because we want to remember these people. We want to take the time to go, man, these people were awesome and they're gone. And it reminds us to cherish the rock stars we have while they're still here. So let's look at three very important people that we've lost over the years. We'll go back to 1983 on the 17th. And we lost a guy, man, he was a kick-ass producer. He was an awesome songwriter, a hell of a singer, and could play pretty much any instrument you put in front of him. That's the kind of guy I want in my band. And that's what Leslie West got when he hooked up with Felix Pappalardi in the band Mountain.
Yeah.
Just a mega talent, man. Like I said, he could do it all. He wrote the songs, he could sing, he could play everything. And then, you know, like, we don't even have to get a producer because the bass player can do it.
You know how Felix died, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. He was shot by a gun that he bought his wife.
Yes.
He bought the gun for his wife. She used that gun to shoot and kill him.
Pretty fucked up.
Yeah, he was 43 years old. Real messed up.
Huge influence on Gene Simmons' bass playing.
This guy was a hell of a bass player. Like, a lot of times bass players don't get their due because they're just there to do their part, to lay the foundation. But when you've got a really good bass player, it elevates that so much. It's like when you're listening to Kiss, you know, even Gene Simmons, nobody gives Gene Simmons credit for being a great bass player, but he is.
Yeah.
If you really can, like, focus in on a song and pick out the bass and hear what the bass is doing, a guy like Gene Simmons and a guy like Felix Pappalardi, they're not just holding it together. They're not just the glue in the song, but they're adding a lot to it as well.
I wouldn't mind doing a Heavier Side of Mountain episode.
I would love to do an episode on Mountain because the only thing anybody ever talks about them is the song Mississippi Queen. But yeah. Man, there's so much more to that band. And then I would say, you know what? Maybe we should include some of Leslie West's solo stuff because he did some amazing stuff outside the band too. And unfortunately, he's also on this list, just not this week.
Yeah, but no, I'm very underrated band that influenced a ton of people.
Yeah, way more than just Mississippi Queen. Yeah. Felix Pappalardi is buried in Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx. So if you're around that way, maybe stop and pay him a visit. All right, here's another one. Talk about guys that influenced the stuff that we love. Man, nobody's got a higher claim than that than Steve Marriott. That guy was Paul Stanley before Paul Stanley. He was Steven Tyler before Steven Tyler. He influenced all those kick-ass bands from the 70s. And you know what? Being a part of Humble Pie was a band that really didn't get huge here in the United States. But I think everybody knows the song 30 Days in the Hole.
Or I Don't Need No Doctor.
Or I Don't Need No Doctor. Those are probably the two that you know if you just don't even know nothing about Humble Pie. But if you spent any amount of time listening to classic rock radio, you're going to hear those two songs eventually. Steve Marriott was an amazing songwriter, a hell of a guitar player. But man, that dude's voice was out of this world.
Yeah, one of the best rock singers ever, as far as just pure vocals. But tons of energy. Him and Frampton together in a band, man, what a combination. And I saw Frampton play here locally, you know, like a year ago, and he did a little bit of that stuff. But man, I would have loved. I mean, if you don't own Rockin' the Fillmore performance, you know, the live album, you owe it to yourself to buy it. But like, imagine what that lineup could have done had it stayed together. And obviously, it worked out for Frampton; he became gigantic from it. But man, I would have loved to have heard them collaborate a little bit more.
Yeah, it does kind of suck that, you know, Peter Frampton leaves the band. He goes on to become a household name.
Yeah.
The rest of the guys kind of fade out into obscurity.
Yeah, I mean, they did well in Europe, but yeah, that was kind of it for them in America.
Yeah, I mean, they got a bunch of albums after that. Even into the 80s, they were still trying to keep it going, but it just wasn't happening. And Steve Marriott kind of lived a quiet life. You know, and he lived in England, and he would play clubs and stuff like that with his friends. I guess what I'm trying to say was Steve Marriott was the real deal. So even after any chances of fame and fortune are gone, he's still playing down at the local bar. Like, yeah. He never gave it up completely. He always, always had the music in him, and he always found a way to let it out. Until 1991, at the age of 44... when he died in a house fire.
Yeah, it's tragic.
Yeah, that sucks. I mean, because that's a guy that I think today would have been so much more revered than 1991.
No, I agree. He was on the trajectory of like a Rod Stewart. Had that same raspiness in his vocals. Never went for the hits, though. That's where Rod kind of broke away from that crowd, because the Faces were contemporaries of Humble Pie. So, right. But Rod went the commercial direction. I'm sure Steve Marriott had opportunity to do that, but he just seemed like just a rock and roll guy that wanted to play music with his buddies. And that was a really, I think he was satisfied with that. He never seemed to really want to be a big rock star.
Well, and even at that, I think he tried, but it might have been too little too late, because I recently found a Steve Marriott solo album that I was like, oh yeah, you know. And I got it home and played it and listened to it, and I was like, oh man, this is weird. You know, it's not really rocking. It's very, very poppy.
Really?
But
I haven't heard that.
It's a strange album, and it's not what I expected from him at all. But in 1991, I didn't even know who Steve Marriott was. I didn't know shit about Humble Pie. Probably knew those two songs. That was about it. And probably because I heard bands that I like cover those songs.
Sure.
And that's probably how Humble Pie even comes onto my radar. But now, all these years later, man, I put Humble Pie right up there with the greatest of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah, they were awesome.
And one thing I'll always remember, and, you know, thank God for this show, sitting in my Camaro with Gary Corbett and a big fat doobie listening to some Humble Pie.
Oh, nice.
Gotta love my life, man. I knew my audience when he hopped into the car and I grabbed that iPod and put it on Humble Pie, and he's like, heck yeah, man.
Yeah, that's his childhood right there.
Yeah, I knew he was gonna love that. That's perfect doobie smoking music.
Either Humble Pie or Deep Purple. He loved talking about John Lord.
Yeah, for sure. So you want to remember Steve Marriott. Got one more. This one's a little closer to Chris, I think, because this is the New York scene that you love so much. It is the anniversary of the passing back in 1991. Wow, just a couple of days after Steve Marriott. A few years younger, at the age of 38, we lost Johnny Thunders.
Oh, God, that's a tragic ending right there.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of notes on that. I just got OD question mark.
Well, that's still up for debate. But yeah, he rented a room in New Orleans in the French Quarter. I actually walked right in front of the hotel a couple years ago when my wife and I went down there, because that was one of my plans. I was like, I got to see where Johnny Thunders died.
Wow.
Checked into the hotel there, and apparently his body was found in some weird ass contorted way.
Yeah.
And I think some of his stuff was missing too. So he was at least robbed, But of course, where he was staying was like the heroin den of New Orleans. But it's, I mean, I'm sure he OD'd as far as his body was in some really odd state, but that's all I'll say about it.
Yeah, check that out for yourself. It's a weird story. So thankfully, there's only three. Unfortunately, three pretty important ones.
Yeah, Johnny Thunders was awesome.
Remember these guys, Felix Popolardi from Mountain, Steve Marriott from Humble Pie, Johnny Thunders from the New York Dolls. He's also got some cool solo stuff before he died, too.
Absolutely.
I got that LAMF CD.
Oh, the Heartbreaker CD.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff on there.
Well, and then Duff McKagan does an awesome cover of You Can't Put Your Arms Around a Memory.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great song.
Very cool. Those are the ones you want to remember, and those are your rock star death days. Now that we've looked to the past, let's take a look to the near future. Right about the time you're hearing this, got some new albums coming out on the 19th. Brand new one from Ian Hunter. You know, the guy from Mott the Hoople. He's still around. He's still putting out music. He's got a new album coming out called Defiance 2 Fiction.
The new single is really great. And his last solo album, that was several years ago, but not long after we started the show, that was a great one too. But yeah, still good in his old age. You can hear the age in his voice, but man, still a great songwriter.
Yeah, and he's got a bunch of special appearances on this album, including most of the band Cheap Trick. Brian May from Queen is on here. Joe Elliott, a whole bunch of other people. But I think this is something that's going to be really interesting to a lot of people. On this album, you've got what is most likely the final recordings from both Taylor Hawkins and Jeff Beck.
Oh, wow.
So I think that's going to give this album a lot of attention. Pretty historic. And shit, it's Ian Hunter, man. That guy can write a tune in his sleep, and it's going to rock.
I'll go ahead and bring our Kiss connection for the weekend real quick. I'll go on YouTube rabbit holes and look up stuff. And not that this is anything breaking, but you know, the Kiss, their famous Largo show is the one from the Love Gun tour, which was on Kissology. And that's probably the best documented version of the band. But
that was the one we all had when we were kids on bootleg VHS.
Well, we would have Shout It Out Loud from that show, but this is the one that got kind of unveiled on the Kissology show. It's like the best pro shot there is from the 70s. But Largo also in-house videotaped a lot of their shows. And during the Sam Loomis leaks from about a year ago, one of them was Largo 75 when they were on the Alive tour.
Yeah.
And it's great to watch, but it's plagued with all kinds of really goofy video effects that whoever was running the in-house there was layering on top as they did the show.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. So it's like the Kiss logo would pop up out of nowhere and stay on the screen for 30 seconds, or the Hotter Than Hell cover would suddenly just appear on screen. It's annoying for that, but the footage on there that is there is beautiful. It's gold. But the thing related to Ian Hunter is at the very beginning of the video, and you can watch this on YouTube, it has like the, you know, the dot matrix like lettering at the beginning that they had set up, and it said something like Largo, Capital Center, Maryland, Kiss, Styx, and Mott. So the show was Kiss with Styx and Mott the Hoople.
That might have been after Ian Hunter was out of the band then.
Maybe. I'm just connecting it with Mott the Hoople. But yeah. That would have been a really fun show to see.
Yeah, because they still, even when Ian Hunter left the band, they still stuck around for a while and still came out with some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a cool triple bill for that venue.
Yeah, definitely. It would be nice to have the footage of the whole thing without all the bullshit.
Yeah, but I think it was being done live by whoever was recording it in-house, so I think it's just printed on there like that.
Oh, fancy technology from 1975.
Yeah, it's like drop some acid and you'll have fun watching it.
All right, so on the same day as Ian Hunter's coming out with his new album, you got a new album from the Pacific Northwest heroes, the Melvins. Yep, their 27th album. It's called Tarantula Heart. and they've taken a very experimental approach to the recording of this album. What does that mean for the Melvins? I can only imagine.
They're so creative, and they always do really interesting, innovative stuff, and I still, to this day, cannot get into their music at all.
Yeah, a little too artsy for me.
I don't know. I don't like Buzz's vocals. Never have.
And that's one of those bands that you would think we would all love because they love Kiss so much.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, but I've tried several times to get into them. I'm like, nope, they're not for me.
Yeah, I can't do it either.
Nope.
Well, here's another band from the same area. Did a little better than the Melvins, I'd say. They're back with their 12th full-length studio album. It's entitled Dark Matter. It's the new one from Chris Sinzak's wife's favorite rock band, Pearl Jam. Is she excited about this?
Yeah, she is, actually.
Is she really? Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And I love the single I heard off of it. It's heavier than their normal stuff.
And that's kind of what they said. You know, you mentioned this a couple of weeks ago on a Geek Wire where I think Eddie Vedder had said, like, the new album's going to be heavier than you expected. And it's like, well, how heavy do you really expect a Pearl Jam album to be? But I've heard the title track, and I've heard a song called Running. They're both pretty good. I mean, nothing mind-blowing, but pretty good. The guitar solo on Running is really good.
Yeah, I don't know that they'll ever put anything out that I would like as much as that first album, 10, but, you know, it's... If we get a few songs, I mean, I'm always good for at least two or three songs on most of their records that I like. So I'm excited to hear it.
I agree with that. Yeah, Pearl Jam's always one of those bands where, man, at the time when they came out, I really, really wanted to hate them. Just because of what they represented, just how, like, Pearl Jam fans were so, you know, they'd stick their noses up in the air at the guys that like Motley Crue and Poison and shit, you know, and act like they were so much better than everybody else. And, you know, I hate pretentiousness, you know, and I always looked at Pearl Jam because of their fans as like, I don't want to like Pearl Jam because that's some U2, you know, better than you kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
But then years later, my brother dragged me to a Pearl Jam concert here in Nashville, and I was actually pretty blown away on how good they were. And I did like the music on the first album. I mean, other than Jeremy, which you've heard a million times, and maybe a couple other little spots, for the most part, that's almost a perfect album, talking about 10.
Yeah, the 10 albums are great.
Yeah, so, but then I didn't want to like them, but then I'd hear stuff that I did like. I remember they had that song, Do the Evolution.
Yeah.
And I saw the video for that, and it's like, oh, fuck, here's another Pearl Jam song I like. But what totally won me over on Pearl Jam was seeing them live, and they were really good, and we had a great time that night, and they played all kinds of kick-ass rock songs. And so then I was like, okay, I'm going to actually open up on Pearl Jam. And it's like 50-50 for me. You know, some of their stuff is cool, rocking stuff. And then the other half is artsy, folk rock, kind of strange shit.
Yeah, well, they'll cover Black Diamond regularly live. So any band that does that, you get my respect for that at least.
Totally.
And especially recognizing Kiss's absolute best song. And I don't care if you want to argue with me. That is Kiss's best song.
No, I think we've established that once before. You can't top Black Diamond. Andrew Watt produces this album.
Oh, great.
Well, I mean, shit. If he can work with Ozzy and it turns out good. And also, I don't know if you know this, there is a new Black Country Communion album coming out later in the year, too.
Yeah, I think that they've released one single so far.
Yeah.
I've liked it, though.
Right on.
But yeah, no, I'm just busting Andrew's balls because he's the in-demand producer right now. But a lot of people do have it take issue with him because he gets very hands-on with the writing and stuff. But I don't know, that could be a good thing for Pearl Jam. Who knows?
Yeah, for Pearl Jam, it might be something really good. First two songs that have been released, pretty good. Pretty good.
It'd be funny if you listen to it, you're like, this all sounds like an Ozzy album.
This is the greatest Pearl Jam album I've ever heard. It's a lot like Ozzy. All right, so then, man, I don't know how album releases work anymore. So those all come out on the 19th, but this one says it comes out on 420. Maybe that's the thing. It's Corey Taylor, CMFT2, or Not To Be. It's a covers album. He's going to cover some Alice Cooper. He's going to cover some Led Zeppelin, some Ozzy, some Priest. But the coolest thing I think I saw on here is he's doing a cover of Life, Sex, and Death. He's going to do the song Tank.
Nice.
That's awesome. Very cool.
I'm excited to hear it just for that alone.
Exactly. Yeah. As soon as I like, oh, it's a covers album. He's doing a cover of what? Oh, shit. Now I want to like this.
I'll give him credit, though. He definitely picks some interesting covers when he does do covers.
Yeah. He's going to do Is It My Body by Alice Cooper.
That's a good one.
That's a really good one. Here's something. I don't have an official release date for it. All I can find is that it's going to have a spring release. And there's not a whole lot of information about it that I see either. But if this guy's coming out with a new album, I got to mention it. Our old friend Robert Fleischman.
Oh, I know a little bit about this.
He's got something in the works. It's called Emotional Atlas. Tell us what you know.
You're not going to like it. I know that.
Is it Nine Inch Nails style?
It's like all electronic music.
So it don't rock at all?
No, there's no guitars or bass on it at all. It's all electronic.
Damn it, Vinnie Vincent. You turned Robert Fleischman off to guitar players.
Yeah, he's hooked on drum machines, too.
What
an epidemic. Oh,
man. Well, if you love Robert Fleischman so much that you will even listen to that, it's called Emotional Atlas. You can pre-order it now.
I'm tempted to order it just for the cover art, because the cover art that he did himself is really awesome.
He's a hell of an artist.
Mm-hmm.
He is a hell of an artist. And I'm talking about like visual artist.
Yeah.
Like I've seen some of his like photos and things that he's done. Like he's really good at that stuff.
Yeah, it's digital art, but he has a really good flair for it. I've really liked a lot of the stuff I've seen that he's done.
And it's coming out on LP. I'm sure he'll have some cool design for that too. He's just an artistic dude.
Well, I'm trying to decide if I want to order that or the Tough Fist First vinyl that Stevie just released.
That's got guitars on it. I can guarantee you that.
I might go with the Tough. Because also, I think I've got him agreeing to do the Albums Unleashed on that album.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we can tie that in with that and with Religious Fix, because
it's the same album, isn't it?
More or less, yeah. It's a kind of Fist First is like a primer for the next album coming out, which the songs that are on Fist First all appear on Religious Fix.
Gotcha.
And that was one thing I wanted to ask him that I always wanted to ask him. And I actually pulled him aside on his table at Rockin' Pod and said, Stevie, are there any differences with these songs? And he's like, no, it's the same thing. And I always wondered if they were like recorded in a different session, but for collectors, and man, that's such a cool album cover too, with the tough like rings and the fist busting through. That alone is worth it. And just to have something cool and extra from Stevie Rochelle and Tough, you got to love that. So as always, it's Tough CDs. Is it CD? Is that still the website?
I think it's RLS Records.
RLS Records. That's what it is. It used to be Tough CDs back in the day.
Yeah.
So yeah, check that out. Support Stevie Rochelle. Keep that shit rocking, man. We want to keep that dude around for a long time. That's somebody I would love to hear some new music from. I know he does projects for other things, but man, it'd be cool to have just a kick-ass rock album from Tough again.
People have pestered him for years on the Metal Sludge boards about that, and his answer is usually, I just don't see a point in doing it. I don't know that he wants to get in the same room with all those guys. I know him and Todd are still tight, and right. Michael, but the whole X factor is always George.
Yeah, and he did the thing, the what comes around goes around again.
Yeah.
And that had a couple of new songs on it, but it didn't have George the Saint on it.
And I get why he doesn't want to work with George, because George is a wreck, but George like kind of was the flair musically.
Yeah.
Not that I'm a Tough expert. You would know better than me.
Right. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is with that. But, you know, again, in this day and age where you can create some art and not even ever have to be in the same room.
Let me go to the prompt and put it in and like write a Tough song.
Right. Yeah. There you go. AI. We talk about that a whole lot on the Chris and Aaron Torpedo Dudes
the crossover event.
Yeah, we did a crossover event with ourselves.
We'll see. We'll see if you hear it. But it was a train wreck. But it was fun to record.
We're going to talk about that more on the next GeekWire. So if you're a Decibel Geek VIP, you definitely want to hear that episode. I'm going to work on getting that one out real quick.
Yeah, let's put that one out soon.
And then yeah, and then after that, we'll come back and maybe we'll talk about more. We've done some weird things that we've got to fess up to, I guess. And share with the world.
Fess up to.
I don't know. All right, so let's do one more date because this will take us out to the end of the month. We'll have something new next week. I don't know what yet, but we'll come up with something. We always do. And so let's look ahead to the 26th. That's the day the new album, the 17th studio album from Accept Humanoid, comes out. Now, I know you heard the first song and you said you didn't really care for it.
I've heard the first two.
Yeah.
The title track was the first single, which I did not really like much at all. There's nothing wrong with it, but it felt like paint by numbers, except for some, it just didn't have a real hook to it. But the newest song, I can't remember the name right off the top of my head, but the newest one, I think it's called The Reckoning.
Yeah.
Is the new single. And that one's really good. I like that one. So we're one for one so far. We'll see what the rest of the album sounds like.
All right, cool. And we'll all find out together on the 26th. That one's coming to you from Napalm Records, produced by Andy Sneap. You know, he does a hell of a job with Judas Priest. He's going to make Accept sound their very best as well. That one's coming our way. If you love your shit heavy. No, I'm talking about real heavy. Like Satan in hell heavy kind of stuff. Man, you got to be excited for the 13th studio album from Deicide. Did you know Deicide was still around?
Oh, yeah. Lynn Benton.
Yeah, apparently they've never gone away. They got a new one coming out the same day as Accept on the 26th. It's called Banished by Sin. It's on Raining Phoenix Music. That's some heavy, heavy stuff. If you're into it, I got some new stuff for you. If you love death metal, like those guys got to be like considered some of the fathers of like real death metal, right?
Yeah. And, you know, big surprise, the songs are about Satan.
Spoiler alert.
Here's another spoiler alert. Kerry King's new album, all about Satan.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it is. All right, so I got one more for you. She don't want nothing to do with Satan. I'm talking about Canadian treasure Lee Aaron is out with a new one called Tattoo Me. It's coming our way on Metalville Records. Comes out on the 26th. It is also a covers album. It will also feature a cover of Alice Cooper's Is It My Body. So in a couple of weeks, we can do a side-by-side with Lee Aaron and Corey Taylor and say who did it better.
Wow.
Yeah. She's also going to cover some Zeppelin, some Elton John, some Steppenwolf, Heart, Hole, even. And a bunch more.
I like Lee Aaron. I like some of her stuff.
I do too. Yeah, she's all right, man. Great voice, great singer. Always had that like rock attitude. Metal's kind of a dude's thing, and it has been for a long time. And it's always awesome when a woman can break through and really kick ass. You know, you got your Lita Fords and Heart and the Donnas and bands like that. Now you talk about the best women in rock, you kind of got to put Lee Aaron in there as well.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Those are the albums coming your way in the near future. If I missed anything, let me know. Because, you know, I'm sure I miss stuff. I miss stuff all the time. I am not perfect, and I'm not very good at this. But somehow, everybody still listens to us, and that's awesome.
I'm going to call a bit of an audible here.
Okay.
I'm just going to quickly touch on a couple of stories, and then I'm going to skip to something that someone just sent me as we were recording this. So, first off, Sammy Hagar and Palms Casino Resort are going to unveil a tropical poolside oasis called Sammy's Island. So Sammy has fully transitioned into Jimmy Buffett territory.
Oh, fuck, man. This is one of the moments where our brain's tearing itself in half, and one half saying, don't say it, don't say it. The other half saying, Ian Wadley will never forgive you if you don't say it. So Sammy saw that there was an opening, so there was no more Epstein Island. So now it's like, hey, I got to take advantage of this. I got my
own. I did not expect things to go there. Wow.
As for you, Ian. I didn't want to say it, but I knew I'd lose his respect forever if I didn't.
He does look kind of predatory in the article picture, him leaning up against the lifeguard chair. It's a little creepy.
It's just him and Bill Clinton and the Prince of England.
Wow. Can't wait for the feedback for this.
I'm just joking, everybody. I'm just joking.
All right. And then one more story before I get to the breaking news item that just, it's just going to be fun to goof on. But there's a band, a super group has been formed through Metal Blade Records. Oh. So that Metal Blade's going the Frontiers route. But I'm actually excited for this. It's a band called Category 7.
Yeah, man. I'm excited about this too.
And it features Phil Demmel and Mike Orlando. Phil Demmel, of course, from Machine Head. Mike Orlando from Adrenaline Mob. Singer John Bush,
yep,
from Armored Saint and Anthrax, and Overkill and Shadows Fall drummer Jason Bittner, and our good friend Exodus bassist Jack Gibson.
Man, this is going to be awesome. I can almost guarantee it. On paper, it's a winner.
Well, it's got all the ingredients of what you would want. So especially with John Bush singing. I love anything John Bush is a part of, so I'm excited for this.
Yeah, me too, man. I'll be keeping my eye on that. That's going to be added to the Albums of the Future list here pretty quick, so when I get a date on that, I will let everybody know.
Well, and I see Jack pretty regularly because he hangs out with our friend Christine all the time, so I need to pester him the next time I see him. Like, hey, let me hear some of those tracks early. Come on.
Yeah.
Skip a few other news stories, including Joe Elliott saying that Def Leppard doesn't use backing tracks. I'll let you decide on that. John Bon Jovi saying that it's up to God if he's going to perform after his vocal surgery. Wow. I'll give John Bon Jovi credit. At least he's taking it on in an honest way.
Right.
Where he's like, you know what? My vocals were terrible. My voice is shot. I got work done, and I'm going to be honest about it. So good on John for doing that.
And in the meantime, Joe Elliott's pushing back.
Yeah, I question the Joe Elliott thing.
Like, have you heard Def Leppard lately? Of course we're not using tracks. Do you hear how terrible I sound?
Yeah. And then the other story I had was the 2024 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees are going to be revealed live on American Idol, which is great for me because I don't care about that, and it's definitely going to be on a show that I will definitely not watch.
Yeah, fuck both of those institutions.
Yeah, so they deserve each other. Right. But no, I got sent a message from my friend in Australia who I go back with through our Vinnie Vincent stalking days. And
your Vinnie Vincent stalking days.
So Vinnie Vincent is now posting as the Vinnie Vincent Invasion on Facebook. So he's back there posting updates, and there's a new update that just got posted like today. Okay. So should we go over this real quick?
I guess.
All right. Vinnie Vincent Invasion Judgment Day Guitarmageddon Part 1. I will be including Faisal's performances on at least one new track, a Vinnie/Faisal high velocity co-pin We are currently in the recording stages of that track, which delayed the finished product at least until the end of this year. I expect to finalize all mixes by December. Judgment Day is scheduled as a double gatefold album in Fantasyland. I added that part. Judgment Day Guitarmageddon Part 1 is the record I wanted to make. It had to be perfect, and it had to be on my terms. Robert Fleischman is at his zenith, delivering mind-blowing monster vocal performances beyond the imagination. This is Rob's legacy. You blew my mind, my friend. We captured lightning in a bottle. For all Vinnie Vincent Invasion fans, these Vinnie and Robert recordings are pure nitroglycerin. What the fuck? If you love Vinnie Vincent Invasion, Judgment Day Guitarmageddon is for you. This is the over-the-top version of VVI. I have no release dates yet.
Wow.
You will know when I know. Expect a follow-up announcement in mid-December or early January. I hate the delay, but it is the way it is. There are factors beyond my control, such as studio availability and recording new songs to include on the album, which push it back, but it is coming soon. And then he says, I introduce you to Faisal Smile, my chosen voice for Vinnie Vincent Invasion. I'm extremely excited to bring Faisal into the coveted position. Coveted by who?
Yeah, I was confused by that because he's talking about this Faisal dude who I thought was the singer, but then he's talking about Robert Fleischman, who's the singer, so who's the singer?
So he's saying that Faisal's going to be on at least one new track, and the rest of it's old vocals that Robert cut in 1991.
Oh. Then how can you act like this is Robert's legacy and like it's something new?
It's not. Robert has nothing to do with this.
So are is it unreleased vocals? Is it songs that never...
No, it's going to, I can tell you right now, it's going to be tracks from the Guitars from Hell album that never got released, or Guitarmageddon, or whatever you want to call it. But almost all of those demos are available on YouTube with Robert singing.
So it'll be old demos and one new song.
That's the vibe I'm getting from
And that's a huge if.
It'll never come out. And he says, I've been working with Faisal in the studio over the last year, and he's delivered incredible drop-dead performances. These are not words I thought I'd ever say, but he killed it. Faisal delivers the same spine-tingling Rob sound I had been searching long for. Faisal was an uncut diamond, but I knew with my direction I could facet his vocal into a rare gem, and we did it. Oh, my God. I stretched his capabilities beyond what I thought possible.
Wow.
In my humble opinion, Faisal is the heir apparent to Rob. Currently in the recording stage with Faisal's monster vocals are the VV shred-out re-records of both Vinnie Vincent Invasion albums, VVI and All Systems Go. Who cares about that?
So this guy is doing karaoke on the old songs too?
Yeah, and he says these recordings will be VVI 2.0, new song arrangements, updated to 2024 and beyond, bringing the originals to a fresh era of electrifying excitement. So get ready for a wicked ride on the VVI roller coaster. Buckle up.
I mean, I guess I'd like to hear it.
Well, this is what Vinny is in the game for. This alone, just the hype. He never intends on releasing anything. He just likes to get everybody stirred up about shit.
Yeah, because it seems like, and again, this, we're talking Vinnie Vincent, this is just our opinions and probably opinions of many, many people out there, but yeah, he hypes it up, but he never seems to deliver the goods.
Nope. And it's just, he's Lucy with the football and we're Charlie Brown.
Yeah, but I don't care. I mean, if it comes out, I'd like to hear it. But I'm not. I don't give a shit if it does or it don't.
It's just fun to goof on when we do the show.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But no, I long gave up on him putting out anything real, just because I think he's nothing but a con artist, and I don't think he really has any real interest in actually performing music or writing music. It's all about just making as many dollars as he can off the fans, but he's even botched doing that. He could have made so much more money if he'd handled things differently.
I think the last time I really got excited about Vinnie Vincent, outside of him appearing on the show that time, was when he told us that he had songs that it stood up to Revenge. I think is what he told us. Like, it was songs for revenge or songs in the style of revenge or whatever. And they were real songs and they were the real thing. And he had them. I was like, I want to hear that.
Yeah, I don't think that exists.
But I think, looking back, I don't know, I think he was just bullshitting us.
I'm sure he has those songs in his head, but he hasn't written them yet.
Like, give me $500 and I'll think about letting you hear them.
500, please.
And then you wait by your mailbox for them to show up, and maybe they will. Maybe.
Maybe I'll just get an empty box like our friend Earl.
And a lot of other people.
Yeah.
Well, not a lot of other people, but some other people.
But yeah, but that's, I had to do our textbook Vinny update because I got sent it by our buddy Warden Schramm.
It's almost like a public service announcement, but like, you know, we ought to have like a buzzer, like whoop, whoop, you know, everybody look out, Vinny Vincent news. It's probably bullshit, but we're going to let you know this is what's going on. But remember this Vinny Vincent we're talking about.
Should go back to the cricket sound effect we used to use.
Man, life was a lot more simple and fun when Vinnie Vincent was in seclusion.
Yeah.
I miss those days.
Me too. He was more interesting when he was a mystery.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. We need a new Vinnie Vincent.
Somebody mysterious that I've been trying to find, but I never can get any real leads on, was what's his face that played bass for Ozzy that was such a wacko? Don Costa. Can't find him anywhere. He's the guy that had like razor blades and would cut himself on stage.
Oh shit!
Yeah, he was a wacko.
I don't know if we want to bring him into our lives.
I think he's probably dead. I haven't been able to find him.
I want to champion his big return. Let us know in the show notes who should be our new Vinnie Vincent. Who is the most mysterious person in rock and roll that we ought to hunt down and see if we can bring him back?
I don't know, man. Our track record kind of sucks. I don't know if we want to do that.
But like, I got this guy I really like, but you guys need to stay the fuck away from him because I see what happens.
He's going to come back and rip everybody off.
Yeah, but he might appear on the show one time.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's all I got for this week.
Crazy times in the world of hard rock and heavy metal music. You got a little bit of it all today, you know. This is always fun for us. Even in crazy times, this is one we can sit down and pull off for you guys. And we appreciate you guys sticking with us. As always, we're an eclectic group. We really are. You know, we're special people that love this music no matter what. And love to talk about it, love to hear about it, and just, damn it, love the music. And we appreciate you because you're like us and we're like you. So thank you guys, as always, for tuning in with us. This is the Decibel Geek Podcast, and this has been Geek Wire.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.